Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll focus in on Minnesota's Air National Guard, meet the man behind Dog Tag Furniture, and get an update from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
The Minnesota National Guard is well equipped to accomplish our missions both domestically and overseas. In order to be prepared for all types of environments and challenges, we train as we operate. Sometimes overlooked, however, is the impact that the training and daily operations we conduct has on the environment. I'm proud to say that for many years, Camp Ripley's Environmental Office has been at the forefront of conservation and stewardship efforts, not only within the state, but the nation. The Environmental Office conducts numerous ongoing studies on wildlife and plants to document the quality of wildlife habitat found at Camp Ripley and to investigate relationships between military activities and sensitive wildlife species. To date, these studies have demonstrated a high degree of compatibility between military activities and wildlife species. For example, while it has long been thought that timber wolves are sensitive to wilderness dwellers unable to adapt to human activity, a radio telemetry study was found that Ripley wolves breed and raise their young relatively close to centers of military activity and are, in fact, quite adaptable. One of the great success stories of the Camp Ripley Environmental Office is the identification and tracking of the bear population within Camp Ripley Reservation. Through the 20 years of the program, Camp Ripley personnel have been able to identify nuisance bears and also to locate bear dens on the post. This year, as in past years, school groups, journalists, and visitors of all kinds will have the opportunity to visit a bear den on Camp Ripley. They'll see the bear's natural habitat firsthand and get a look inside the Environmental Office's efforts to balance the needs of the military training with environmental stewardship. For more information on the Camp Ripley Environmental Office, as well as the Environmental Classroom, log on to MinnesotaNationalGuard.org and click on Camp Ripley.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Today we're going to talk about the Minnesota Air National Guard in a couple interviews that were set up by Brigadier General Sandy Best, who is the Chief of Staff of the Minnesota Air National Guard. She's responsible for the command, supervision, oversight, and leadership of the 133rd Airlift Wing and the 148 Fighter Wing. General Best wasn't able to be with us today, but she graciously asked the commanders of those two units to come in. So we have Colonel John Safstrom, who's the commander of the 148th Fighter Wing up in Duluth, with us, as well as Colonel Daniel Gabrielli, who's the commander of the 133rd Airlift Wing out at the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport. And colonels, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
I think we've had both of you on the show in the past and talked about a lot of things in your units, but I think this is the first time that we had the fighter wing and the airlift wing on the show, and of course now we're going to see who's the boss, the C-130s or the F-16.
Oh, we perform as a tag team.
Exactly.
All right. Well, since I was in the 133rd, colonels, we're going to start with the 133rd.
2-1. It looks like a good fight here.
We'll try to balance it throughout the show. But Colonel Gabrielli, can you tell us a little bit about the 133rd Airlift Wing and your aircraft and capabilities?
You bet. The 133rd Airlift Wing is located out at the Minneapolis International Airport, and we've got 1,200 members, and about 280 to 300 are full-time. And we are obviously our International Guard unit. We fly 8 beautiful C-130 H-3 aircraft, and they're meant to be tactical intra-theater airlift, so they operate low and slow, and they do airdrop. They do short field landings, night vision goggle. They do airlift, airdrop, and go to some of the forward operating bases. Is kind of their bread and butter for two missions: the domestic Dom Ops type mission and in defense of the state, and then also the warfighting Title 10 mission overseas.
Colonel, that aircraft C-130 goes back a lot of years, but I'm sure they've upgraded it repeatedly in the different versions over the last. How long has it been around? How many decades?
Well, I'd say since the 50s. So we have the newest of the H models. So now, as probably a lot of folks know, they've gone to the J models as the newest version of that aircraft. But of the H models, ours are 1995, 1996 models.
Colonel, I can remember flying in one of those several times when I was in Vietnam, and we had short airstrips. and you could see what the pilots were doing. They were kind of standing on the brakes and revving it up, and all of a sudden you'd take off and go straight up in the air. I thought it was on a flying tank.
Yeah, I mean, they can get good acceleration going with the props. It's a turbojet, but they top out at about 300 knots true, and that's max what they do. They're not meant for the long haul. If you're looking to go over the ocean on the way to deployments and those things, it's a long, slow, you know, loud ride. But when we get in theater, that's our bread and butter. We just operate, you know, short hauls between the main bases and the forward operating bases, as well as the airlift or the airdrop mission.
Really a workhorse of the Air Force.
It really is. It's a workhorse, and in these latest conflicts, it's proven its worth quite a bit, and it's really shown in a lot of the conflicts ongoing over in the desert right now.
And Colonel, we've had retired Brigadier General Hamler on the show before, and he was talking about the medevac flights. You still do some of those?
Yes, and I should include that. The aeromedical evacuation is a big part of what we do in our operations. So we do a lot of the aeromedical evacuations. In fact, and I'll get into this when I talk about some of our numbers, but we deployed 14 of them just recently for the hurricane support down to Scott Air Force Base. They weren't needed any further, so they were released back to us. They're coming back tonight, but they wanted a moment's notice and went out in the night. And they, just like every Air National Guardman, citizen airman, they volunteered and stepped up, and they went out to do their duty and went into the great unknown, and now they're coming back.
And Colonel Sastrom, we've talked about this before, but there's a federal mission and a state mission. In the federal mission, they're called to active duty, and they go off to war. And In the state mission, the governor can call you up and for floods and hurricanes and things. But we've heard Governor Dayton lately. We heard him out at the fair offering the assistance of the Minnesota Air and Army National Guard with to help in Texas and Florida.
Correct. Yep, that's correct, Tom. We, you know, we are a fighter wing up in Duluth. We have 22 F-16s, about 1,000 people, and you know, mostly the F-16s obviously are used in that capacity as a federal mission, but we certainly do have our airmen trained in a lot of the Homeland Defense DOM ops, as we call it, mission too. We have a civil engineering squadron, we've got firefighters, we've got medical folks, all sorts of support folks that that can help in the homeland fight too and assist her in hurricanes or natural disasters.
And up in Duluth, you've even got a bomb disposal unit.
We do. We do. We have an explosive ordnance disposal, the EOD folks, and they have all the latest equipment. And we pretty much are the only game in town in northern Minnesota. So when the governor and the tag needs us, we're able to go and assist in any way.
Colonel, last time I was up there, we took a tour of that unit, and they were telling us about some civilians in the area that brought things home from World War II, and every once in a while one props up and you have to go pick it up.
That's the case. We're seeing less and less of it, Tom, I think, as time goes on. But you are correct. We've had a couple found in garages and barns, and you know the safest thing to do is call the local law enforcement and emergency responders, and then they eventually get a hold of us if we think it's a credible threat, and our experts go up and render that piece of equipment safe.
And another example of the Minnesota National Guard working hand-in-hand with local authorities to get things resolved.
You are correct. We have the trained experts in their field. So,
Colonel Gabrielli, your C-130s, I imagine, are in high demand, and you've had some deployments.
Yes, sir. This is our big deployment year. This year we've got currently 290 folks deployed to 11 different countries. About 500 have returned from deployments, and over this calendar year we'll have deployed about 800 folks. So that's well over half of the wing, and that's our Title 10 mission, you know, to the warfighters overseas. And then in addition to that, this is a total example of the dual mission on display. While we're going through our big deployment year overseas, we've also had 64 people put on orders or postured to go with hurricane support. So that number's come down. Now that the aeromeds have returned down to 27, and we've got a combination of security forces folks, airlift control flight folks, and logistics readiness folks right now down at St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands called on a moment's notice to open up an airfield that was basically ravaged, closed, looted, and they're pretty much a bare-bones operation at an uncontrolled airfield receiving traffic right now into that airfield. They've moved 480 tons of cargo on and off airplanes. They've worked 165 passengers on about 80 flights that have come in out of there over the last 2 or 3 days. We're getting sit reps back every day. So they're churning a mission down there and making things happen and making things happen for the folks that are in need down there, enabling that airlift to come in and out of that field. And it's an interesting kind of a bunch, the airlift control flight folks. They basically consist of a grouping of jack of all trades. They've got weather folks. They've got air traffic control folks. They've got loaders and unloaders for airplanes, logistics, personnelists. And basically, they move into a field that's bare, and they set up operations, and they do the whole gamut. And so that's enabled airlift to go in and out of that island that's been so ravaged.
We're speaking with the commanders of the Minnesota Air National Guard's 133rd Airlift Wing and 148th Fighter Wing on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel Gabrielli, we've had some of the soldiers from the Minnesota Army National Guard on the show, as you know, and they were talking about the deployment to the National Training Center last year. And they had like a train load 9 miles long of equipment that went out there and exercised in the desert for 2 weeks and then came back and had to refurbish all that equipment. When you go on one of these federal missions over to the desert or over somewhere else and come home, you're sending the air crews, you're sending four of your aircraft, you're probably sending some mechanics and other support personnel. But when you come back from something like that, is there some deferred maintenance you have to catch up with?
Yeah, there is. There's a deferred maintenance, and they can do the best to keep them up in the theater, but the deferred maintenance, but then with the folks too, and John Safran will also back me on this, you'll do your warfighting mission, but there's a lot of training events and sort of squares you have to fill as a flyer that you can't get in theater that you're now going to have to reconstitute back home. And like you said, the Army tends to go in a gigantic group over time. We have onesies, twosies, threesies, and our biggest deployment is our ops maintenance package. But we also have Afghan advisors over. They've got C-130s in the Afghan Air Force right now, and the Guard and Reserve are their trainers. So we just had a couple pilot and navigator return from 6 months of training the Afghanis how to fly and stand up their own C-130 Air Force. And we've got some maintainers, five maintainers over there right now doing that advising mission as well. So we do all those things, and then we do this unique advisor mission. So we're into every kind of mission that's over there. Doing really meaningful work so countries can stand up their own defenses.
So when the individuals or the aircraft and the crews come back, you have to play a little catch-up both in training and deferred maintenance, and I hope if it's a federal mission, they give you some money to catch up with that maintenance.
Yeah, absolutely. So they get a lot of day, get some leaving downtime when they get back, but then when they get back to the squadron, they got some spin-up to do flying-wise to get all reconstituted and get those planes some tender, loving care and get them back into shape.
So some pretty putting a little pressure on your maintenance unit to get those aircraft back and ready to go.
And they're all returning themselves. So absolutely, that desert environment's not generally kind to aircraft, but they do a great job maintaining them over there, and then they bring them up to speed when they come back home.
Well, that's the work to do. Gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the 133rd Airlift Wing and the 148th Fighter Wing on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been speaking to the commanders of the 148th Fighter Wing and the 133rd Airlift Wing. And from the 148th, we've got Colonel John Safran. And from the 133rd, we've got Colonel Daniel Gabrielli. And it's interesting to note, gentlemen, that how in the world, when you start in the Air Force and your career in the military, do you end up being commanders of the units in your hometowns? Colonel Gabrielli, you were born in the Twin Cities, and Colonel Safstrom, you're from Duluth. How did that happen?
I'd say I never would have seen it happen in this way, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. Just a St. Paul boy, and now that I look back, I remember seeing the C-130s go over the house, you know, and if you'd asked me when I was 5 years old seeing that, if I would be the wing commander of a unit. I didn't even know where the unit was based back then. So pretty, yeah.
So like, you're full circle. So you're claiming cool. Innocence, but I don't
exactly.
Think there's any innocence with Colonel Safran.
Oh, what?
I think he deliberately volunteered to come to the to Duluth.
Well, I did, Tom. Obviously, like you said, I grew up in Duluth. I love it. I brought my family back there after I got out of active duty, and we've been there ever since. And it is a dream come true to be the wing commander there at the 148th. It's amazing people, amazing community, and. I just love it. So I'm feeling very blessed right now and very honored to be part of that organization.
Colonel, a little smaller unit. You've got about 1,000 airmen, and Colonel Gabrielli's got 1,200.
Right.
But you've got F-16s.
We sure do. We do. We have, Tom, we have 22 of the newest and greatest F-16s in the Air Force, the Block 50 F-16 that does the suppression of enemy air defense mission. So it's a highly capable. It's got all the newest equipment on it. And a lot of people don't know that we have a frontline Air Force fighter unit right there in Duluth, Minnesota. So it is a great place to be.
And when the terrorists struck on 9/11/2001, your planes were in the air, weren't they?
We were in the air that afternoon. In fact, I was flying some combat air patrols over Minneapolis at the time. Kind of an eerie feeling with no other air traffic around. But we are a hometown unit. We provide both, you know, the federal mission at the time. We did the Homeland Defense mission, the ACA mission, and Aerospace Alert or Sovereignty Alert, And since that time, we've remissioned into the seed mission with the newest F-16s that we have. But we certainly did that for a long time in our state.
So, Colonel, I think it takes a C-130 about an hour to get to Duluth. How long does it take an F-16 to get to Minneapolis?
Well, they got a lot more gas. They can take their time. But if we light the wick, we can be here in about 15 minutes. So.
Wow. That's wonderful.
Yep.
Colonel, I understand your unit recently won an award.
We did. We were honored to receive the National Guard Association of the United States Distinguished Flying Unit Award. We received that recently, and then we also received a safety award, the John J. Pesch Safety Award. So the folks at the men and women of the 148th are getting recognized for their hard work. It's fantastic.
Colonel Gabrielli, can you keep up with the awards?
Well, we do our best at the 133rd to keep up with Duluth. And anyway, I think I was on a little over a year ago and we described our new inspection program. And I'm going to give big kudos to Duluth. They got a highly effective on their last on their capstone and how we're inspecting ourselves. We came out of it and ended up our commander's inspection program got an award, a Junius W. Jones Award for the best commander's inspection program, not only in the Guard but in the Air Force. That was kind of a nice coup and a nice deal for us.
Nice to be part of the Minnesota Air and Army National Guard, the top of all the ratings in terms of preparedness and serving beyond the size of our state in terms of all the missions that we go on. And I think you guys should be proud of the Army, and I know they're proud of you.
Yeah, extremely proud. We have just a fantastic organization here in Minnesota and nationally recognized, and it's easy to be commanders in an organization like this.
We're speaking with Colonel Daniel Gabrielli and Colonel John Safstrom on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel Safstrom, last couple times you were on the show, we were talking about a deployment to South Korea. How'd that go?
It went fantastic, Tom. And I measure that by getting the mission done and bringing home everybody safely. And we did that. And so our folks returned in 2015, in late 2015. If you can believe that, it's already been that long. And it's been a whole year and a half. And so we are... getting ready for our next deployment. So the Korea deployment was what we call the theater security package, and it is basically ramped up presence on the Korean Peninsula, and because obviously, as you know, if you're watching the news, there's a lot going on there. So
we're constantly rotating units through there.
We are, and that's mostly a Guard mission, an Air National Guard mission. We have fighter units that rotate through there consistently and maintain kind of that extra bolster of presence there.
So if needed, and we hope we're not needed, you've got pilots and you've got people that are familiar and they've been there.
Correct.
Just like the soldiers have been over to Kuwait time and time and time again. And
correct.
If they have to go back, they know where to go and what to do.
Exactly. And there's nothing, there's no substitute for training in theater and in your area of operations that you need to go to. So.
And you've got another deployment coming up.
We do. We're preparing next year for, we've got about 1,100, close to 1,100 airmen in our wing. We're going to have about 500 of them deployed next year. So almost half of the wing is going to be deployed at any given time. We have a lot of folks going with expeditionary combat type of support. So like Dan mentioned earlier, onesie, twosies, you know, sending people to fill in for critical Air Force positions overseas in theater of operations at different times. Those are mostly our support experts like civil engineering, firefighters, medical folks, all those kind of folks. And then just like Dan, we have an operation maintenance package of our aircraft that go. And those folks are going to also mobilize and deploy next spring. And so all told, we'll have about 300 with operations and the pilots and the flying mission, and then about another 200 with our support folks, all deployed mostly to the Southeast Asia.
Colonel Gabrielli, 148th deployed. You're deployed now. The Red Bulls have been notified there's a big deployment for next year. How important are the support systems, the Yellow Ribbon networks, the communities that are here to support your families?
Incredibly important because, as we know, and I've always said, the harder job, you know, we go off and deploy a week to do the thing we train for. So it's like practicing all the time. We kind of finally get to play in the game. And it's the spouses back home and the kids that are holding down the fort that need that support. And they get it from family, they get it from community, and the Yellow Ribbon's been huge. And it's been the communities I've lived in, it's been extremely robust. I live in St. Paul now, but for a while I lived up in Hugo, and they had a really strong Yellow Ribbon program, and incredible, you know. And the businesses that are looking to help deployed families, they're wanting to help. They're not just saying, hey, we'll help if we need it. They want to be asked to help. So a lot of that support is huge, and it's a great network.
And Colonel Sastrom, if all of those agencies and groups are here taking care of your families, must help your airmen to focus on the mission while they're gone.
Tremendously. Just in my time in the Minnesota National Guard and my career in the military in general, I've seen it change tremendously, immensely, and especially here in Minnesota. We've gone to great strides with the Yellow Ribbon Program, Yellow Ribbon Cities, Duluth, of which is one, and a lot of the corporations. I can't emphasize how important it is to be able to not think about your primary concern, which is your family and your business, if you have one, or your other job, or whatever else is going on in your life, is to be able to deploy and not be concerned about some of those factors that are happening back home.
Colonel Gabrielli, you've got 1,200 airmen, and excuse me, Colonel Sefton, you've got 1,100 instead of 1,000. I missed that one.
But, I round up,
but who's
Tom.
Counting?
I round up.
In any given year, you must have a number of those retiring. And you always need to put some new ones in at the bottom, whether they're airmen first class or they're ROTC officers or they're pilots. You're always recruiting to try to fill positions, aren't you?
Exactly. And recruiting retention is, we like to say, everybody in the unit's a recruiter. And they're trying to put their best face out there and in their communities and basically tell their story. I think I'm a big believer that if somebody in the wing just tells somebody who seems that they're interested in doing what they're doing, if they just tell them their story of how they got there and the neat things they get to do. We just talked about all the places they get to go and things they get to do. That alone is recruiting right there. You don't have to give them a sales pitch. You just tell them your story. Like John's story and mine are very similar. Grew up in St. Paul, was active duty for 10 years, wanted to come back to our hometown. Hey, there's a guard. Got in there, and so, you know, things all just happen that way, and I tell my story, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. There's nothing more fulfilling than what I've done, and they see it, and they see it in your face, and they hear it when you talk about your story, and that's the big thing.
And Colonel Sastrom, I've talked to some of your airmen, and they not only understand there's deployments, but they want to go. It furthers their career.
They do, Tom. Yep, they do. Our folks are joining to serve their state and their nation, and by deploying, that's the end result of many other things, serving at home too. But, you know, that's kind of the pinnacle, to deploy and to serve your country overseas. And so the educational benefits, the support to families, and the biggest thing in the Guard, I think, is just the family atmosphere. When they're joining a family, they're joining an organization that cares about them, and I think that resonates with a lot of folks.
So, sir, if you had to do it all over again, would you do it?
I want to keep doing it, Tom. They're
going
to have to pry me out of the seat someday, so...
Colonel, last question for you, Colonel Gabrielli. For all our listeners out there, if they're considering a career in the Air National Guard, what would you tell them?
Well, I think I just said it in my last answer. I would tell them my story and tell them all the fun and adventure I'd had. This has been an adventure I wouldn't trade for the world, and I really, really mean that, you know. And we never thought 9/11 was going to happen and how that all went down and the deployments and everything. A lot of people can look at it with a glass half full and go, or glass half empty and go, boy, that's pretty tough stuff, but those are the best memories I have. It's all attitude, and when you do those kind of things, you come back with a feeling of fulfillment that you can't be matched. So it's just that kind of inner feeling of knowing how great this has been, and just tell your story. That's it. You tell your story, it'll show through.
Gentlemen, it's been a true pleasure having you both in the studio this afternoon, and I'd like to have you back on sooner next time. Let's not wait a year and a half, sir.
Sounds good, Tom.
Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom.
That was Colonel John Sastrom from the 148th Fighter Wing and Colonel Daniel Gabrielli from the 133rd Airlift Wing on Minnesota Military Radio. In a moment, we'll meet the man behind Dog Tag Furniture. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to meet the man behind Dog Tag Furniture. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelletoe.
The Minnesota Veterans Home Minneapolis and St. Catharines University in St. Paul have partnered together to better serve residents at the Veterans Home. Clinical staff at the Veterans Home will work with students and faculty at St. Kate's to provide innovative clinical and collaborative practices that prepare students of healthcare degree programs to better serve and work with aging veterans. The areas of focus are skilled nursing care, dementia care, and mental health. What's unique about this partnership is the students participating at junior level and above, which elevates the clinical practice and education into practical experience. Our vision is that this partnership will provide valuable experience for students and have a positive effect on the residents at our home. This collaboration with St. Catharines is a great example of how a partnership can be mutually beneficial.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Dogtag Furniture is committed to making sure every fallen hero deserves respect, whether it is a hero's death in combat, in peacetime, and or veteran suicide. The aftermath the children and families must endure lasts a lifetime. Our goal is to honor the sacrifices made, help restore a sense of normalcy to the families left behind, and ease a financial burden while providing emotional and spiritual assistance. And that's the mission statement for Troy Walker. Troy, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Troy, I understand that you were in the Army for about 10 years.
Yes, sir. I was a 19-kilo Abrams tank crewman. Nothing really special. I just kept tanking.
And you were deployed at least once?
Yes, sir. I was deployed 3 times.
And where?
It was Korea and Iraq twice.
In Iraq twice. And you had you made a lot of good friends when you were in the service.
I did, sir.
So when and where did Dogtag Furniture come along? I understand that you actually make furniture.
Yes, sir. I started about 7 years ago. Biggest mistake of my life. I made my wife a dining room table. And ever since then, she goes, hey, you can make this, you can make that. And I started making it and I started selling it. Hopefully one day we could take our family to Disney World with the extra income we were getting. But then 2 years after that, it kind of took a turn. My best friend, battle buddy, tank commander, first line supervisor, took his own life. And his wife called me and said that they were already living paycheck to paycheck. They couldn't afford anything. They couldn't afford the funeral, so she wasn't going to claim the body. And I called my battle buddies, and I used the money that I had in savings for this Disney trip, and we paid for the funeral. And this kept repeating. It repeated 6 more times, and I ended up burying 6 close friends.
And in the process, you started making some wooden American flags.
Yes, that is correct. When I would have my booth, I always have my furniture, and then I would have American flags, and I used that money from just American flags to help pay for veterans' funerals. And at the beginning of the summer, it kind of took a turn when Pete Hegseth from Fox News bought one of my flags. And he said, I couldn't be the only one doing this. He said, there's 72,000 veteran organizations in the United States. There's got to be at least one or two that pay for veteran funerals. So Pete Hegseth had a team of investigative reporters for a whole week try to track down another organization like mine. And he invited me to come on the air in Fox News and National TV to tell my story.
And the next thing you know, you got a call from a special building in the United States.
I did. I got a call from the curator of the White House wanting to put one of my flags in the White House. Followed by about a week later, I got a call from President Trump thanking me for what I do. And he said, thank you for making America great again.
And so now you're going to have to deliver a flag to the White House and hang it.
Yes, sir. We're working out the logistics right now. It takes 2 or 3 months, they said, but I'm going to go out there and we're going to hang up one of my flags in the White House.
Troy, what did you get yourself into?
I had no idea. Fox News even said, you know, expect around 200 to 300 orders, and we were ready for that. And then all of a sudden, within 8 hours, we had 1,500 flags that we had to make.
So you're out in Norwood, Young America.
Yes, sir. I started this in my driveway.
And you've got a couple of buddies that help you make these things.
Yeah, I have the best crew ever. I have an ex-felon, an ex-deputy sheriff, an ex-pastor, and myself. And between all four of us, none of us have a good back.
But at least you got the pastor praying over everything.
We got the pastor and myself praying over every flag. After we make the flag, we always say a little prayer. We ask God to give us the strength and the abilities to keep on making one more flag, that he provides enough money for us to pay for one more flag and to pay for a funeral.
So for our listeners out there, if you go to dogtagfurniture.com, you can see some photos. There's a couple of different kind of wooden flags, and there's some T-shirts, as I understand it.
Yes, there is.
So there's, and I think I read, if you buy a T-shirt for $25, like $15 of it goes towards these funerals and all of the money from the flags after the materials go for the
yes. With that, our objective is to be able for 92 cents of every dollar to go back out. So we have very little overhead. Me and my wife are a 2-person operation. I have volunteer help. I have volunteers that just come for a day, help us build and stain and move on. And that's why we try to keep as much money we can for the funerals.
So we're speaking with Troy Walker from Dog Tag Furniture on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, Troy, you were on the TV and you got an order for or orders for 1,500 flags, and then you got partnered up with Home Depot.
Yeah, that's right. I went to Home Depot and asked them for a discount on some wood, and they said, "Yeah, we got a better idea. Not only will we give you the discount, but we'll give you $10,000." So we can fulfill all these orders. So our goal is on October 28th in Norwood, Young America. Home Depot is not only supplying the building materials, but they're going to have 40 employees come out and assist me assembling them. And we're putting together our own teams. We have the Hennepin County Sheriff putting together a team. We have a couple of fire precincts putting together a team. We're going to have the Red Bulls out there. They're going to be security and directing traffic and parking for us. We're going to have some VIP. Hopefully, we can get some really good VIPs. We're going to have a DJ, and we're going to have food on site. So you get free food. Come and put some flags together.
So you're looking for some volunteers.
Yes, we're looking for volunteers. We're looking for donations. And, of course, we are looking to sell some stuff off our website.
And once again, that's dogtagfurniture.com. Troy, did you ever imagine you were going to have a big day like that, trying to assemble 1,500 flags?
No, I was doing five a day. 25 a week out of my garage. I just took on a life of its own. I've just been the vessel, and everyone who donates and buys the flags, they're the hands. They're the hands that actually pay for funerals. They're the hands that get me out there to talk about our cause, raise awareness, and hopefully pass some legislation.
And I understand somewhere along the line the city found out about what you were doing at your house and came out and visited you as well.
Yeah, they visited me a couple of times. In fact, they drove past my house every morning making sure that I wasn't doing stuff in my driveway. And they got to the point where they're ready to shut me down.
But you made peace with the city and everything's good.
I made peace with the city. I moved out of the driveway. A friend of a friend had an old pig barn and said, "Hey, here, set up your shop here."
So once again, for our listeners, dogtagfurniture.com. There's some beautiful wooden flags, a couple of different styles of it, and some T-shirts. And Troy is helping provide funeral expenses to our veterans who can't afford it.
That is correct.
It's not just those who die from wounds of war and take their own lives, but there are a lot of veterans just living hand to mouth.
Yes, there's a lot of veterans living hand to mouth that don't have enough money to buy a life insurance policy. Over the summer, we helped a World War II veteran who was homeless to pay for their funeral. It's not just for suicides. It's for any veteran out there that needs financial assistance, because they only get $300 from the VA.
Well, it's a great thing you're helping them. Troy, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to visit some more with Troy Walker from Dog Tag Furniture. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today with Troy Walker from Dog Tag Furniture, and his website is dogtagfurniture.com, who actually has a for-profit business making furniture. But he's been a little too busy making American flags lately, because he raises a lot of money to pay for veterans' funerals when they're not able to pay for it themselves. And, Troy, we hope things settle down and you can keep doing this this great work. But you do have to sell some furniture on the side, too. So for everybody out there, if you need some specially made furniture, think about Dog Tag Furniture. And if you want a really nice wooden flag or a T-shirt that says some good things on it, go to dogtagfurniture.com and you can get it. And, Troy, you were on the television, and then you got a bunch of publicity, and you got orders for 1,500 flags, and now you're going to have a big flag assembly day with the help of Home Depot. But when you're making these flags, you said you make them five a day and whatever you can make them. What are you thinking about when you're doing that?
A long time ago, when I was in college, I heard Aeschylus quote, and it said, "Even in our sleep, pain which cannot forget falls drip by drip upon the heart. Until in our own despair, against our will, comes wisdom through the awful grace of God." And I sit and think about that every flag that I do, about how we learn from tragedies.
And, of course, this all started when one of your battle buddies was overwhelmed with his experiences and took his life, and his wife didn't have enough money to even claim the body or to pay for a funeral.
Yeah, that is correct. And he was my brother. He called me when my son was born at 1 o'clock in the morning. He called me at 1:30 in the morning to talk to me so I got home safe. I mean, he was always there for every great event in my life, and the good ones and the bad ones. And he's my brother.
And I see you pointed out that for those that commit suicide, combat veterans, they didn't commit suicide. They succumbed to their battle wounds, plain and simple.
That's what I believe in. I've seen, I've done two tours. I've seen a lot of my friends go home with the scars of the battlefield, and a lot of them cannot get help, or if they do get help, it's sometimes ineffective.
Well, Troy, you're doing great work. Tell me about these flags so our listeners can understand.
So I make these flags. I make them out of 1x2 furlings, which is a cheap pine wood, and we cut them down to 4-foot sections, and they're about we make them 46 by 20 inches, and we have two flags. We have Old Glory, which is traditional red, white, and blue. It's a little rustic. It's burnt. And then we have a rustic flag that's made out of walnut and golden oak stain. And we're able to put logos in the right-hand corner. We do all the service logos and seals. We do almost any logo as long as it's not too detailed. We get a stencil made and we spray it on there for the individual. And we also do flags. We don't ask for any money when a family has lost a son, a daughter, whatever, in combat, and they reach out to us and they want a flag made in their honor. We do it for free. We put their name on the flag. We put the operation and their KIA date on there.
And when the flags are complete, what do you do then?
And then when we're complete with those, we have a little tradition in our shop where we all stop what we're doing. We pray over the flag and we ring a bell 21 times to give the soldier a 21 salute before we ship it out.
Very good. Troy, how many flags do you think you've made?
I try to keep track over the summer. I think I was at like 105, and then this took off, and I've been doing about 50 a day now with my volunteers.
And so what do you need? You need some volunteers? You need some contributions, donations?
We need any help we can get. We need volunteers. We need contributions to keep this going. We also need smart people that are willing to help us out getting logistics and business acumen and getting this into a really big nonprofit.
So if you've got some retired veterans or some other folks who live out around Norwood, Young America, and you want to spend part of your time helping make these flags, you need some help.
Yes, sir. You can stop by anytime. We're there from sunup to sundown making flags.
So for our listeners, let's get plenty of volunteers to making those flags so Troy can make some tables and chairs and desks and things so he can pay his bills.
Yes, sir.
Troy, just got about a minute left. Did you ever dream that you were going to end up doing this?
No, I was happy to sell two flags a week.
Well, how do you feel about the turn of circumstances?
Tell God your plans and watch him laugh. That's all I got to say. I mean, I knew I wanted to do something with my hands and make furniture. I never thought it would be like this.
Well, Troy, you're doing a wonderful job for a great cause, and thank you very much, and we appreciate you coming into the studio today to share your story.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
That was Troy Walker from Dog Tag Furniture. And if you want to help, volunteer, send some donations, go to dogtagfurniture.com. And, of course, get on there and order a flag. It might take you a few months to get it, but he'll get it out as soon as he can.
Yes, sir, I will. We have a 6 to 8 week lead time right now, so just be patient with us.
All right, Troy, thanks for visiting with us today.
Thank you, sir.
That was Troy Walker from Dog Tag Furniture. Joining me now from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard is Tim Leonhard. Tim, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you, Tom.
Tim, I don't know how we got to October, but here we are, and the weather's still nice, and I'll bet you're still riding that two-wheeled vehicle.
That I am. That I am. A lot of us still are. We're trying to get in the last moments we can.
How late can you think you can go? November, December?
Well, I usually go until there's ice on the road. Once there's ice on the road, I can't. Two wheels and ice just don't navigate.
All right. We'll get that cage out because we don't want to get you in any accidents on the ice.
Oh, no, that's a given.
Minnesota Patriot Guard and your riders go all year round because there's missions to go to every day, isn't there?
We do. You know, just about someplace in the state, there's a mission every day.
And for those listeners that might be new to the show, we've got three new stations this week. The Minnesota Patriot Guard isn't just a bunch of old Vietnam vets, is it?
No, it's not. It's everybody, anybody that wants to or has the urge to honor the our fallen and make sure their military knows that they're appreciated. They need to just step up and come on out to a mission with us and actually physically display that.
So all they need is a flag and a pole and a good heart.
Absolutely. We'll show you exactly what you need to do. Just show up, and the ride captain there, that's the guy that's in charge, will point you the direction and give you the scoop, and you'll walk away feeling absolutely wonderful because you did something that for a family that's in the darkest moments of their lives, and you were there to support them.
So you'll walk away feeling like you got more than you gave.
Oh, yes.
So how do we sign up if you've got listeners that want to join the Minnesota Patriot Guard and become a rider?
If they want to join the Minnesota Patriot Guard, just go to mnpatriotguard.org, and on the left side it says join us. If you just fill in the little blank there, it'll put you on our email list, and we'll send you just the information for missions that are going around in your area or even in the state.
And you never really know how many are going to show up at a mission, but enough show up every time, don't they?
They do. They do, which is wonderful, you know, but we can always use more.
And, Tim, it's all about those three words, isn't it?
Honor, dignity, and respect.
And the job you and your riders have been doing for years and keep doing is wonderful. And, Tim, I hope you have a great week, and thanks for joining us this week.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Tim Leonhardt from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Colonel John Safstrom, Colonel Dan Gabrielli, Troy Walker, Tim Leonhardt, Commissioner Larry Shelodo of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk to Major General Nash as he retires after 7 years as the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard and celebrates 7 years of Minnesota Military Radio. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.